Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Deng-Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, June 15th, 2018. South Sudan's government spokesman suggests a Kiir Machar meeting may not happen in Addis next week.
The best place where you can meet Kiir Machar is in the East South Africa. It seems that there is, I don't know what I may call it, but it seems that there is some sort of undeclared competition.
And a South Sudanese civil society delegate says regional and international bodies should put more pressure on the warring parties to end the conflict.
The assembly representing these people has a constitutional mandate to elevate their voices. And so at the moment, critically, the priority for South Sudan is peace, and the needs of the people are all on peace. And so it's important that the assembly focuses on this demand of the people they represent.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government says it is no longer interested in President Salva Kiir meeting with rebel leader Riek Machar in any of the IGAD member states. Government spokesman Michael McQuay says there are competing interests among IGAD member states of Sudan, Kenya, and Ethiopia, all of whom have offered to host a Kiir Machar meeting. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir sent a high-level delegation to Juba recently, offering to mediate face-to-face talks between President Kiir and Riek Machar. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed Ali this week invited Kiir and Machar to meet in Addis Ababa next week. But McQuay says Juba believes the competing interests of some IGAD member states may not provide a neutral ground for a Kiir Machar meeting.
The best place where you can meet Kiir Machar is in the East South Africa. It seems that there is, I don't know what I may call it, but it seems that there is some sort of undeclared competition. And I hope he wants the meeting to be held there. Addis wants the meeting to be held in Addis. Khartoum wants the meeting to be held in Khartoum.
McQuay says the South Sudan government now prefers to have a President Kiir travel to South Africa to meet with the Machar.
Instead of getting involved into all this, the best thing is to hold it in a neutral ground so that none of these three takes it for anything other than a neutral place.
McQuay says any meeting between the two leaders will still be organized under the auspices of IGAD, even if South Africa hosts it. Mabior Garang, the SPLMIO's head of communications, was not available to comment on the government's latest suggestion that the meeting between the two leaders be held in South Africa. Colonel Lampol Gabriel is the SPLMIO's deputy military spokesman.
SPLMIO is only aware of the IGAD process or the invitation that was given to us by the IGAD or by the Prime Minister of Ethiopia that the face-to-face meeting will happen in Addis. Anything about South Africa or any other place, we are not aware of it.
Gabriel says Machar is preparing to arrive in Addis Ababa for a meeting on June 20th with the President Kiir in the Ethiopian capital. Gabriel says the SPLMIO applauds President Bashir's offer to host the two leaders' meeting in Khartoum. But he says the Sudanese leader is yet to extend an official invitation to Machar. He says the SPLMIO believes that Prime Minister Ali has invited the two leaders to Addis Ababa on behalf of IGAD. South Sudanese activist and analyst Remember Miamingi said last month that the interests of some IGAD member states are hampering the progress of the South Sudan peace talks. Miamingi proposed that IGAD be supported by both the African Union and the United Nations in its efforts to ensure that the personal interests of certain IGAD member countries do not slow down the peace process.
The inter-IGAD political conflict and conflict of interest is so pronounced that even when IGAD tries as much as possible to mediate this, they don't do it objectively, they don't do it neutrally, they don't do it impartially because of the conflict of interest in his member state.
Face-to-face talks between Mr. Kiir and Machar were agreed to during an IGAD Council of Ministers meeting in Addis Ababa last month. If it takes place, it would be the first meeting between the president and his former deputy since a peace agreement between the government and Machar's rebel group collapsed in August 2016. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A coalition of civil society groups in South Sudan presented a petition to the Speaker of the South Sudan Legislative Assembly, requesting lawmakers to focus on the search for peace in the country. Rajab Mohandas was a civil society delegate at the IGAD-sponsored High-Level Revitalization Forum. He says South Sudanese lawmakers are not doing enough to pressure the warring parties into ending the conflict in the country.
The people they are representing are desperately calling for peace. They are concerned that the peace process in Addis is delaying and it's not concluding with an agreement to end their suffering. And it's an overwhelming call from the people. And the assembly representing these people has a constitutional mandate to elevate their voices. And so at the moment, critically, the priority for South Sudan is peace. And the needs of the people are all on peace. And so it's important that the assembly focuses on this demand of the people they represent.
Why is it that it has to take the civil society to remind lawmakers in South Sudan that it is their duty and obligation?
Well, civil society is concerned that the assembly hardly debates on issues relating to peace and the suffering of the people they represent, so that they take this task seriously and work in collaboration with all other stakeholders to push for peace. If they speak strongly and call on the parties to consider the situation in the country and compromise in the interest of peace and the people, their voices will have weight in this process.
And why do you think the assembly is not speaking out?
It is difficult to conclude precisely why the assembly is not speaking out. But what is important to us is that the assembly should take lead in elevating the voices of the people for peace.
Help us understand this situation in South Sudan. You have lawmakers there whose duty is to remind the executive that what is happening in this country has taken a toll on the people. But this is not happening. Why?
Ideally, the assembly is usually elected by the people and it has connection, direct connection with the people. And that is when they use that mandate to directly hold the executive accountable on behalf of the people. However, the process that brought this assembly into office was through the executive, a decree from the president. And so this has shifted the allegiance, so it becomes difficult for them to hold the executive to account, because that could cost some of their members their seats. And so that situation is a bit tricky for the members of the assembly themselves.
And do the civil society feel strongly that there is a strong, oversight from the members of the parliament on the executive in South Sudan?
Well, if they unanimously decide to do so, it is possible, because it is a constitutional mandate they have. And that is what we are banking on. We hope that they will consider using their powers invested in them by the constitution.
Is the civil society having faith in the ability of the lawmakers to hold the executive in South Sudan accountable?
Yes, we have faith in the competences and the ability of the members of the Legislative Assembly. And we have faith in the provisions of the constitution that vests in the mandate to do their duties. However, we are concerned that they don't seem to be utilizing that constitutional mandate. And so the situation at the moment demands that they really execute their constitutional mandate on behalf of the people they represent.
Do you agree with other observers in the region who say that lawmakers in South Sudan are just rubber stamp of the executive?
We have heard this a lot, and this comes mainly because there is hardly any direct decision from these legislators that they pass, especially on the situation that affect their people. And so in this case, people complain about them. Not only people in the region, their own people that they represent in the assembly don't seem to have faith in them at all. And so it is important at this point in time, especially that the country is going through this difficult situation, that they step up to their responsibilities and deliver.
That's Rajab Mohandas, a civil society delegate at the IGAD-sponsored High-Level Revitalization Forum. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Juba earlier today. Yesterday, we reported that eyewitnesses and local leaders in the Jonglei state capital, Bor, say two people were killed when unidentified gunmen shot at a fleet of small boats on the River Nile this week. The report said the incident occurred along a stretch between Bor and Wat on the Nile. Wat is not located along the River Nile, and there is no river transport between Bor to Wat. We apologize for that factual error on our part. Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte today said his country will present a radical new proposal for a unified approach in dealing with migrant inflows. His comments follow a meeting he had with French President Emmanuel Macron in Paris. The two met days after sparks flew between their countries over Rome's rejection of a migrant rescue ship, which includes Sudanese migrants. Both agreed new initiatives should be discussed together. Reporter Catherine Field spoke to VOA Kim Lewis about the meeting's expectations.
The expectations are very low. Both the French and the Italian sides have tried to, if you like, downplay not just expectations, but also to downplay the animosity between the two that came out of that decision by France to come down very strongly to criticize Italy for how it has been handling these 600 migrants or so migrants who have been on the Aquarius boat in the Mediterranean. So we're not expecting much, and that's mostly because both nations are looking for a steer from the European Union on where the whole migrant crisis goes from here, how the whole group of European nations is going to deal with it. So because Europe's not divided, neither country can actually decide on what to do, who has shared responsibility for taking care of these migrants.
A new report just came out today in the midst of all the tension, and this comes from Oxfam, entitled Nowhere But Out is the report, and it's claiming children as young as 12 are being abused and detained and sent back from France to Italy. Can you speak more on this report?
Yes, indeed. It was a report that, as you rightly say, came from Oxfam. Well, it alleges that French border police have been making it difficult, not just for migrants to come into France across the Italian border, but also once they're here, that they are allegedly holding them in police cells or border patrol units without access to food or water. They're actually stealing the SIM cards from the telephones of the people who are coming across, and in some cases altering the date of birth for some of the unaccompanied migrant children who come over, because then if they're seen as adults, they're allowed to send them back to Italy. A lot of these allegations have been around in the media before, but this is the first time that we've seen them actually put together in a report. If you cast your mind back just a couple of months, there were allegations that the French border patrols were entering Italian territory to make sure that some of the migrants were actually going back to Italy. So these allegations will certainly focus a lot of attention onto that border area. Now, just in May, we had cases of two migrants dying while coming across from Italy into Spain. There was a young Senegalese man who died, and there was a very young Nigerian woman who also died. Authorities are warning, of course, that as the summer months start approaching, that they do risk finding bodies of migrants who have died trying to cross those alpine routes. Also, we're looking at large numbers coming across. There have been some 1,500 migrants registered as having crossed from Italy into France since January this year. So it is an area of tension, not just between France and Italy, but also inside France as well, because you have very strict divisions on the political spectrum as to what the country should be doing. Some on the political right say, put a border back up, put troops there, make sure they don't cross, whereas those on the left say, look, we cannot be sending people back in this way.
That was reporter Catherine Field speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis from Paris. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Coming up, a walkout at a girls' school in Kenya. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how much do you care what others think of you?
I don't really care what people say about me. What matters is how I feel about myself.
I do care, actually, a lot, because what you do, of course, doesn't only affect you, it affects also others.
I don't care what others think of me, but what I think of myself, what I can really do.
I so much care about what others think of me, simply because that will make me to adjust to what is expected of me.
Yeah, I don't really care what people actually say about me, because all what I know about myself, I am me, which I will not change for anybody.
I don't really care about what others think about me, because you can't judge a book by its cover.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Democratic Republic of Congo has one of the world's biggest populations of child soldiers. UNICEF says up to 30,000 children are forced to serve armed groups as soldiers, sexual slaves, and laborers. Michael Chikwanin was one of them. Now a refugee in Canada, Chikwanin advocates for peace and educates audiences on the plight of child soldiers. Lisa Bryant caught up with him in the city of Caen in France's Normandy region, the site of the famous Allied landing during World War II.
Michel Chikwanini is a long way from where he grew up in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, but not from the memories of war. They haunt him every night, ever since he was captured by rebels in the city of Beni at the age of 5. His father had imposed an early evening curfew, but Chikwanini disobeyed it to play soccer with his friends.
It was during that time while we were playing when we saw a truck with military personnel racing towards the field. They surrounded the field and eventually grabbed all the kids and put us into a truck.
The militants drugged Chikwanini and the other kids, then trained them to use firearms, but that wasn't all.
I started to cry and I begged them again to let me go home. Instead, they forced me to kill someone. And they forced me to kill my best friend as a way of being entered basically into the group. And I feel guilty sometimes of the fact that I survived and he didn't.
Chikwanini managed to escape, but more violence followed. His family became casualties of DRC's ongoing unrest that has killed and displaced millions over the past two decades. His father, a human rights activist, was kidnapped. Then soldiers came to his house and grabbed his mother and two sisters.
And they started to rape them. And they held me on the wall and they told me to watch what was happening to try and send a message to my father.
Today, Chikwanini talks about his experience to audiences around the world, including during a recent peace conference here in Normandy. His family fled to Uganda, but then his father died, apparently from poisoning. Soon after, the remaining family was granted asylum in Canada.
With the beachhead secure, the infantrymen lost no time in driving on to other objectives.
France's northwestern Normandy region is a good place to talk about war. Hundreds of thousands of soldiers died here during World War II. Most were barely past childhood. In DRC, clerics are spearheading the fight for peace and demanding that long-delayed elections be held. Bishop Fulgence Muteba, who attended the Normandy Peace Forum, is one of them. From his diocese in southern DRC, he's also tried to help former child soldiers.
Ce sont des enfants que j'ai vus traumatisés, psychologiquement abattus.
Bishop Muteba says they were traumatized, so battered by the experience they almost had no feelings. So familiar with violence, their lives were no longer worth living. Many were left to cope on their own. Some committed suicide, others returned to violence. Chikwanine says even those who made it are forever scarred.
My fear is that we've become a community, an international community that normalizes wars, but does not normalize peace. And this is what is happening in the Congo specifically.
He hopes that peace, which returned to Normandy after the war, can return to DRC. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Caen, France.
A high school for girls in Kenya's Narok County is closed indefinitely after students walked out to protest alleged sexual harassment by a staff member. Earlier this month, another school was closed after a teacher was accused of rape. The incidents have left the government scrambling to deal with the problem behind the protest. Raoul Lambour has more from Nairobi.
In what seemed like a well-organized protest at Masai Girls High School, the almost 1,000 students were reported to have walked out of the school at 4 a.m. local time Tuesday. Parents arriving at the school demanded immediate investigation into the matter. Narok District Education Board Chair Samuel Sankale confirmed the incident and said authorities are taking action.
We have decided to close this school. We are investigating a teacher who was trying to force a girl to love him or to have sexual intercourse with him.
More than a week earlier, a rape was reported at Moi Girls High School in Nairobi, forcing the school to be shut down as well. The school's executive board was disbanded by the Cabinet Secretary for Education, Amina Mohammed. She said the education ministry was concerned about the increased cases of sexual assault that had been reported from schools.
I wish I could actually say conclusively that the safety of our children in school, as it should actually be, is guaranteed. I can't tell you that because these schools are part of our society. And as you know, in all societies, bad things actually happen. I think the saving grace is this, is that we have laws, and those laws must be enforced when these bad things happen.
Police are also investigating an alleged rape attempt at a school in Western Kenya. A man is said to have been hiding under a bed in a girl's dormitory and escaped after being spotted by a school staff member. Mohammed has appointed a team to develop a policy to address sexual abuse in schools.
As a Ministry of Education, we're going to put a policy in place. We're going to take measures that are necessary to ensure that the schools are as safe as they can be. But we all have to play a role. Parents, teachers, neighbors, everybody. Because, you know, it's not happening only in our schools. It's happening in our homes. It's happening in our neighborhoods. It's happening everywhere.
She says the cases at Masai and Moi High School are a real wake-up call for the government. Raoul Lambour, VOA News, Nairobi.
Egyptian football fans were hoping Liverpool star Mohamed Salah would play on Friday against Uruguay at the World Cup in Russia. But Salah did not see action and Egypt lost its opening match 1-0. Joining us with more on the match and other World Cup news is VOA's Gwen Uten.
Fans from both Egypt and Uruguay cheered and chanted ahead of their Friday opening match in Ekaterinburg Stadium. The evening before, this Egyptian fan said the faith of his nation is behind the Egyptian team and their star player.
The 100 million Egyptians prayed yesterday because it was a very special night for us. It's the night that the Quran came down. They prayed for Salah to be fit for this occasion, because he is the core of our team, as everybody knows. So we are hoping he will be able to play tomorrow. If not, then we hope he'll play against Russia and Saudi Arabia.
Well, Mo Salah did not play in the match. He sat on the sidelines and watched with dismay as Egypt fell to Uruguay 1-0. They next play host nation Russia on Tuesday. It's been reported that players on Egypt's team celebrated Salah's birthday in their team hotel. Fans inside the stadium chanted happy birthday in the 26th minute of the match. And hundreds of birthday greetings flooded the Twitter sphere with sentiments like this one: Liverpool Lion, Egyptian King, Lion Legend Warrior, happy birthday. Salah's game time could determine how far Egypt advances in this World Cup. While Egypt is the most successful African footballing nation, they have failed to make an impact on the world stage. Some of those who have placed their bets consider Germany to be one of the favorites this year, but they have been overtaken by Brazil to win this year's tournament with odds of 4-1. Spain was also heavily favored, but they have slipped in the rankings following the shocking dismissal of national team manager Julian Lopetegui just hours before the start of the tournament. It was announced on Wednesday that Lopetegui was planning to succeed Zinedine Zidane as Real Madrid's manager once the World Cup ended, to which the Spanish Federation president responded in part, quote, "We have been obliged to fire the national coach. The Federation cannot be left outside the negotiation of one of its employees and find out just 5 minutes before a public announcement." Fernando Hierro has been appointed as the new head coach, and he stressed the importance of calm and continuity in their Friday opener against Portugal. As the matches have officially gotten underway, you may have noticed a big technological change at the games this year, the debut of a video assistant referee team at this year's Cup. It's basically a video replay system that will be used in four key cases: goals, penalties, direct red cards, and mistaken identity. If a clear and obvious mistake is spotted, the refs will make a big outline of a rectangle with his index fingers, run to the sidelines, and stop play. Any time used for review will be added to the end of each half, no matter how long. So no seconds will be lost because of the interruption. Viewers and spectators will also be able to see all replays on the screen. And something else will be in full display at these World Cup games.
I want to remember this trip with the tattoo with my friends. And it's a map, it's a Russian map, and the flags are from Colombia and Brazil, because we are a group, a big group from Colombian and Brazilian people.
Tattoos! An influx of enthusiastic soccer fans, like the Colombian fan we just heard, have kept Russian tattoo artists busy designing soccer-themed images of famous stars, and maps of Russia merged with the colors of a nation's flag. This Brazilian displays a freshly inked bicep and says being in Russia is life-changing.
It's very beautiful. It's an amazing city. There is just one thing, though, that no one speaks English, and it's hard for us sometimes to buy stuff, but it's fine. We manage it.
People around the globe are unified in Russia and having an experience that will no doubt change their lives. I'll let this Argentine fan have the last word.
When anybody loves football, make no distance, no borders, nothing.
Our thanks to my colleague, Gwen Uten, who gave us an update on the World Cup. And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Ya Salem by Emmanuel Jal featuring Abdel Gadir Salim. We've been listening to Emmanuel Jal and Abdel Gadir Salim with the song Ya Salam. I'm Ayan Dengbior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a peaceful weekend, and we hope to see you back here on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. للنجاة للناس مراد وأحسن خيال.